The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Also joining us in studio, another person not afraid to brave the heat to come over to the Hayes Advantage, and that's Doug Borthwick. He's Managing Director, Head of FX at Chapdelaine & Co. You've heard him many times on the Hayes Advantage. Great to have you here today.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with a story we really haven't talked about, but it was something being observed by the stock market today, certainly currencies, everything. China removing the floor on lending rates amid economic slowdown. Doug, it looks like this new leadership is serious about making some changes in China.
Well, it seems that they're certainly on top of the situation, and they realize that there's a worry that they're slowing in China, and that's obviously being shown in how the Australian dollar's been trading, the New Zealand dollar. And if weakness is going from 7.7% to 7.5% of growth, which the market perceives it to be, then what they've done now, they've stepped in and they've said really much more of a signal to the market as opposed to something that's really going to change the market. But the signal says, you know, we're watching things, we see things, we want to move towards much more open interest rates and take away any kind of limitations on where these are. And though it doesn't really affect that much of the economy or the loans outstanding, it's something that's a move in the right direction. Now, what we're really looking for is the deposit rate. So when they change the deposit rate and the rules surrounding that, that's going to certainly be powering further reform. But, you know, the Australian dollar, the Kiwi dollar, as soon as they saw this information come over the tapes, they jumped, you know, jumped 50, 60 pips.
And I want to re-intro my dear friend Mike Holland. Did you hear I just interviewed Gluskin Chef? I made you a co-worker of Dave Rosenberg in Toronto.
I'd like them to send me a paycheck then.
Okay. Mike Holland of Holland & Co. Matt, you travel to China, you invest in Chinese companies. A big deal?
This is a huge deal. As Doug was just saying, this is not so much a financial move as a political move, telling people, including the foreign exchange markets, that the new management in town, they change managements over there every 10 years. These guys have only been in their jobs for 4 months. And for them to take on the financial reform that they're talking about, and the vested interests there are significant. These are the state-owned enterprises. So they gored that ox a little bit today. And I think that, as Doug just said, the big one will be when they do the deposit rates. But that's obviously probably going to come. Doug,
yes.
What do you think? When would that happen?
When will it happen? I think you'll see moves towards that. I mean, China doesn't move on anything very quickly. You know, it requires quite a lot of consensus.
Which is why this was a big deal, right? Because they didn't just lower it a little bit. They said, we're getting rid of this.
Right.
Yeah.
I think you'll see the deposit move, but I think the deposit move is more going to be tied into the currency.
Yeah.
And that people are looking for the currency at some point to become free floating. And right now it's obviously fixed.
You know, call me a crazy optimist, and I think the Chinese have there's areas politically and socially where they have so many issues. But I think the floating currency, I mean, if they get to that point, to me, this is huge for China because it shows that they are truly becoming a modern, open economy. And maybe they eventually someday they even become a modern, more democratic economy. I don't know. Maybe I'm going a little too crazy on China, but it seems like, I mean, that for the currency to get there is a really big deal.
Well, it's inevitable that we'll get there when you become the largest trading partner in the world. And if you look at the number one, number two trading partner in the world now, it's not the U.S., it's really China and in Latin America and Asia, elsewhere. After a point in time, there's never been someone with a fixed currency that's big in the trade environment in the world. And you've seen them signing a lot of agreements with many different companies and countries. And what you'll find that in some point, maybe in the next 5 years, you'll see a liberal exchange rate, one that's free-floating in China, and it's just a matter of time. And you know, the deposit rate will probably change before that, but deposit rate's obviously tied into the currency because that's, you know, where the forward curve comes from.
And if they want to be the world's number one economic power, Doug, they have no choice but to have a freely exchangeable currency.
Well, they have a choice. They've chosen right now to be the economic power and have the fixed currency. But I think that,
but yes, they're number two right now.
Market forces.
They
want to
be number one.
Yeah. Market forces will push them, certainly.
So when you talk about when you look at investment opportunities, does this have any implications for Japan? They've been kind of struggling. Abenomics, bond purchases to fight deflation, et cetera, et cetera. Can't produce cars, can't, you know, produce much in China because of the trade restrictions. This is a big deal for them. What about Japan, the currency, Doug?
Well, in the U.S., I think a lot of the time we look at dollar against yen. And the Japanese really look at Korea against yen, the Chinese renminbi against the yen. What this means is it takes the pressure off of the weakening of the other Asian currencies. And if the pressure is taken off of the weakening of those currencies, it means that Korea yen can move higher, India yen can move higher, China yen can move higher as crosses, which helps the Japanese because now their competitors at exporting are now doing worse. The interesting thing is you've had dollar yen move much higher, but dollar Korea has moved higher too, and so has dollar China, or so has dollar India. And so the benefits to Japan in terms of exporting against their peers have really been mitigated somewhat by the weakness, the overall weakness, or the perception of China having some weakness in their economy. Now that this news comes out today, you'll see dollar Korea come off, you'll see dollar China come off a little bit, you'll see dollar India come off, and at the same time, you see dollar yen rally. And so the crosses, Korea yen, China yen, will move higher, which helps Japan exporting.
Doug, I want to talk about the Fed this week because Ben Bernanke is really the, what do you want to call it? He's the driver for markets in a big way in so many ways. But I just want to touch at least quickly on Japan elections this weekend, Prime Minister Abe. This is also something that's on the market's radar screen, I guess in part because this move, Abenomics, to try to end inflation is also a big driver for the markets.
Yes, and I think that the market shouldn't be that concerned about it. It looks like he's going to continue to get more support, and they'll continue to have a majority along with their coalition, the new Komito party. And so between the two of them, they'll continue to have the support they need to be able to drive these motives forward. And I think that everyone's very happy with how Abenomics is going. I think that the polls internally within Japan show there's a happiness towards it. And as long as the yen weakens against other currencies, And as long as Japan can tell G20 they're doing it for internal reasons, then I think, you know, Abenomics will continue for quite some time.
So let's move to the United States. Ben Bernanke, 2 days speaking on Capitol Hill. What do you take away and what does it mean for the dollar?
Well, I think that literally the Fed is fed up. They're fed up with the inaction by Congress. In November of 2010, Fed Chairman Bernanke wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post titled "Aiding the Economy, What the Fed Did and Why." And he said there that the Fed can't solve all the economy's problems on its own. They need the combined efforts of many parties, including Congress. And the fact is that since then, Congress hasn't really done much. And I always saw the Fed's QE as being a way to prop up the economy until Congress acted and did something. And unfortunately, you know, what he said at the latest meeting was that he's happy to share the burden. The Fed's held much of the burden. There's plenty of room for Congress to step in. And the Fed acting alone is not producing desired results. So really, he's talking the same story today as he did in November 2010. Now, what's interesting is there's also been discussion about how the Fed doesn't try to manipulate Congress to do things. Now, this is very different from the ECB, because the ECB, as we all know from Biedman's remarks, could sit there and could raise interest rates in Italy or could raise them in Spain to force the governments there to do things. Now, unfortunately, the Fed can't do that in the United States because of the dual mandate. The ECB doesn't have that dual mandate, but the Fed does, which means, you know, you've got to keep watching employment. You've got to keep on plowing money into the economy until that employment number comes down. There's nothing they can do to force the Fed, to force Congress to change anything that's happening otherwise.
So where do you see the dollar, given this may be Bernanke's last presentation to Congress, right?
It may be, and if the Fed is fed up with Congress,
right?
Well, I think that the reality is you can be fed up with Congress, but unless they rewrite the mandate for the Fed, which is unlikely that Congress would do that.
A stupid mandate. Dual mandate.
You see quantitative easing continuing for quite some time. Yeah. And the discussion of taper, which I think caught a lot of strength, or the market really got around that over the last month or so. I think really if you talk to the doves, or at least the voters, the voting members of the FOMC, they're not looking to taper anytime soon. They'll discuss it because, you know, that's the prudent thing to do. But in the meantime, stepping back and taking your foot off of the gas in an economy that's barely moving. And there's so many different metrics that you can look at. You know, people on food stamps now is 47 million people in the U.S. There's more people on food stamps in the U.S. than are in private sector employment.
But the problem is that quantitative easing hasn't gotten those people off food stamps.
It hasn't
gotten the long-term unemployed working. And in fact, it's, as Chris Ruppke from Bank of Tokyo Mitsubishi said yesterday, it's almost as if you should take the long-term unemployed, the people who have been so damaged by this, the long, deep recession, because they're not getting jobs. They're on food stamps. But if you look at the other group, in fact, if you took some of those people out of the unemployment rate, it'd be considerably lower. And that's why your point about congressional action perhaps is so important, because the Fed can't fix that.
Right.
It has to be Congress.
I don't think the Fed ever was there to fix it. They're the Band-Aid. So the band-aid
exactly,
or the crutch.
But they can't fix it. Why do they keep buying bonds forever?
Because you know what? If they pull away that band-aid, they take away the crutch, then I think the economy could be in much more trouble.
It's the only thing that's going on in Washington. They're the only adults in Washington. And they were given this dumb dual mandate by whom? Congress.
Right. If the Congress is a lawn, the Fed's the only thing that's watering it right now. Now, it needs some nutrients thrown in there by Congress, but that's not happening. If you take that grass, you take the water away from the lawn, the lawn's going to wilt.
Well, some people think that, in fact, Bill O'Donnell from RBS Securities was on a couple weeks ago. And first of all, he kind of called the 2.7 and subsequent rally, perhaps, in the 10-year back down to 2%. We're not down to 2%, but he said it could get back to 2%. But he also said he thought we were in the eighth inning of a ninth inning game in terms of repricing the 10-year note. If even the talk of tapering is, and that's in the market now, so what's going to happen that's going to slow the economy so much if the Fed stops buying bonds? If yields have already priced in this tapering, what's the big deal?
Well, it certainly will be a big deal. You know, people aren't, the individual isn't out there right now buying homes. Higher mortgages aren't going to make people buy homes in the United States. The people buying homes are investors. So if you
That's an exaggeration. They are buying about a third of them, I think. There are some individuals buying homes, but you're right. There's a huge and that's why some people question the strength of the recovery, because it's so investor driven.
Right. And if you look at interest rates, right, the 10-year, about 31% right now is held by the Fed. So for the Fed to be able to make statements about, you know, moving away, well, if that 31% isn't there anymore to buy, well, that's certainly going to affect interest rates much more than what we've already seen.
So give us your calls. We've got, once again, the euro. The euro has like this magic tether to 130 that never really breaks. I mean, are we going to be at 130 forever on the euro?
I think we'll continue to move higher. It's interesting. You know, people talk about Europe and how lack of growth, and this is going to be terrible for them. Now, if you look at Japan, lack of growth, it went from $120 yen down to $75 yen. Sometimes where there's a lack of growth but also a lack of action, you can actually see strengthening in that currency. I continue to like the euro going higher, but I like it rather against the dollar. I like it against the yen, because if there's one thing about Japan, Japan wants to have a weaker yen. That's obvious, and they'll print until they do that. The U.S. will continue to print as well, but the ECB's come out and said, we're not going to print. So even though Europe may be, you know, not spectacular in terms of growth, people still like Europe because they're not going to be printing money. There's less euros out there.
Okay, Doug Borthwick, we got a lot in this half hour. Thanks for joining us in studio.
Thank you very
from
much.
From Chapter Lane and Co.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130. In Boston on 1200 AM and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.